what is it, 1957? Lord, I just want to go home. How long have I been at this? It seems like forever. Well, figured out here. I've been going back in time in 10-year increments every 33 minutes. It's 1957, so that would be 3 hours, 3.5, 4, I don't know. It just feels like forever. I want to go home, have a hot meal, sleep in my own bed. The meal part sounds particularly good. There's no food here to speak of. Oh, I know, I'm in a diner. You'd think there'd be food in whatever quantity and combination I chose, but it's an oddly ideal diner with everything perfect, and there's nothing in the fridge. I opened. They're on. They're chilling. But there's nothing there. So I've been keeping myself alive in these 3 hours by eating saltine crackers and Kel Bowl packs. You know what the Kel Bowl pack is, don't you? Kel Bowl pack was this wonderful thing invented by Kellogg's, of course, that would enable you to have the convenience and modern pleasures of a bowl of cereal when you didn't have a bowl. That's right. The box itself served as the bowl. You would cut it open and peel back the sides and pour in milk. Of course, if you're a little overzealous in cutting it open, on a camping trip, for example, you'd plunge the blade of the knife right into your thigh. And then there'd be the whole thing with the tourniquet. But the Kel Bowl Pack, even in restaurants that have the Kel Bowl Pack, however, they would still serve it with a bowl. I can't tell you the number of times as a young man that I'd be out on the road with my folks and we'd stop at a diner somewhere. And I would order the Kel Bowl Pack box and it would come in a bowl. It just seemed to defeat the whole purpose of this marvelous technological innovation. They didn't even open it up for you either. They just put the box in the bowl, which would make two bowls, I guess. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm starting to lose my mind. Hi, folks. Welcome to the diner. I'm James Lilex. Last time I checked, sitting, apparently through all eternity, at the long boomerang pattern Formica counter here at the diner, hurtling backwards through time. Well, not exactly hurtling. It's rather herky-jerky stop motion. If you're just joining us, and I hate to say this again because setting the stage here makes me sound like an utter and complete idiot, who, having heard what I'm about to... Damn fly. I'm going to eat the fly if I ever get it. Of course, I heard an old story about an old lady who swallowed a fly. Maybe she'll die. Another one of those cheerful little things that we have children sing from time to time. If it's not babies falling out of trees, it's old ladies eating flies and dying, presumably of some Musca domesticus-born virus. Anyway, or bacteria. If you're just tuning in, I apologize, because this will make absolutely no sense to you, and it makes no sense to me whatsoever, but as far as I've been able to piece together, it goes like this. At the beginning of the year, the diner was sold, right? You know that. We all know that. The diner was sold. It was a shock to everyone, and we wondered exactly what was going to become of it. What changes would they make? Would they fire everyone? Would they turn it into something else? Well, apparently, at some point in the future, I don't know when, I came up with a grand plan to keep the diner from being sold in the past, and it involved sending back to myself a giant 9-foot-tall Terminator-type robot from the future that looked like the Pillsbury Doughboy. Don't ask me why, because I don't know, because I haven't invented it yet. But I do know that I sent it back to myself, and apparently it's supposed to take me back in time and do something. What? I do not know! Only that. Every so often, we go back 10 years. And I'm guessing that at some point I'm going to stop, and my mission will become apparent. All I know is that I'm in this diner. I can't go outside. It's completely empty and oddly perfect. And that from the creaking on the roof I hear from time to time, I know that the giant 9-foot-tall Terminator robot Pillsbury Doughboy from the future is still perched on the roof. That's how he's doing this whole time travel thing. And of course, how I invent time travel in the future is, I don't even want to think about it. So here I am in 1957. I'm not born yet. I'm not even a zygote yet. Not even a blastocyst. Sort of strange to think that whatever random protein strings that would eventually become you when metabolized by your parents are at this moment locked up in a pork chop or a carrot somewhere, waiting for your parents to ingest them and, through the miracle of biology, turn them into moi. Well, here I am in the 50s, and for some reason I'm not as excited about it as I thought I would be. I mean, I love the 50s. Don't I? Granted, I don't have any first-hand experience of it, and I can't at the moment because I can't leave the diner and I can't see anything out the window, and the only way I'm going to be able to get the present era in is by turning on the radio, which I'll do in a few minutes here, I suppose. But sitting here, I've just been thinking that maybe I don't like the 50s as much as I thought I did. What is it, after all, that I like about the 50s? Does it come down to nothing more than the magazines and the color choices? I was thinking about the movies, which got widescreened and saturated with color and banal and empty and loud somehow. And I don't really very much like the movies of the 50s, with, of course, the usual exceptions. The noir of the 50s got grittier and cheaper. The television shows don't do much for me. They really don't. They're interesting in a historical, cultural, sociological sense, but I don't really find them amusing or all that suspenseful with the rest of it. Like any medium in its infancy, it had growing pains. And the music? No. I've never liked that whole sha-na-na at the hop crap, frankly. Some of it's great. Well, okay, with any era, of course, you're going to have two strains. You're going to have what the kids listen to and what the older folks listen to. But in the 50s, I'm convinced of it, that there was a higher amount of craptitude than previous generations had experienced. Because in previous generations, if I keep hurtling back through time, I'm sure we'll have the opportunity to discuss this. I mean, I really hope that this stops at some point and I don't end up in 1867, researching exactly what the distinctions between the Fife cores look like. But anyway, in the 20s and 30s, at least you had different varieties of sound. You had not a wide variety of musical styles, but there were different cross-pollinations. There was the blues, there was the jazz, there was Dixieland, and it made for an interesting stuff. But there was a monolithic quality to the teenage pop in the 50s that is bad. We all know the classics. Oh, we all love the classics, the Chuck Berry tunes and the rest of it. But for every one good Chuck Berry tune, and, it was one song done 15 times with different lyrics, for every one of those, there are about 275 wannabe songs that are indistinguishable in their badness and execution. They're all some raw-voiced hillbilly shouting about his rockabilly baby or his rockababy Billy or something or other, and it's the same jangly sound, it's the same mono mix, it's the same stripped-down ornamentation, it's the same banal, echoey little voice. It's... Well, if I find some on the radio, you'll see what I mean. So it's not really the music, then. So what do I love about it if it's not the television and if it's not the movies? Maybe it's the fashion. Like, women's fashions in the 50s were pretty sharp. Like, men's fashions in the 50s were pretty sharp, for that matter. Maybe it's the cars. Yes. Yes, that's it. It's the cars. Big, heavy tanks. Two-tone fins. Yes, that's it. That and the other ancillary aspects of American car culture. The idea that you could just get in your big old Buick and point it down the asphalt ribbon and drive until you hit a hamburger stand. That's it. Yep. Petroleum and grease. One you put in the vehicle, the other ingest. Ergo, Homo Americana, circa 1957. Okay, maybe it's that. And the colors. Oh, and the space age, too. That's it. The space age, of course, which became the jet age in the 60s and then reached its natural apotheosis with the landing on the moon, and then, of course, came to its depressing conclusion with Skylab, I think, when Skylab fell on everyone's heads and spawned novelty songs about the same. I think that was the sort of the moment in which American diminution and Carter-esque malaise and our space program collapsed into a hot little dot and winked out entirely. But in the 50s, they were getting ready to go, and they were full of it. They were full of the UFOs and the silvery needle ships that would soon streak into the stars. And the man in the uniforms, tunics and jumpsuits in space, and they looked dashing. I mean, Leslie Nielsen, for God's sakes, before he became a comic punchline in all the airport movies, was in Forbidden Planet, and what a fine space captain he was. Now, that was it. So it's the cars, it's the hamburgers, it's the color scheme, and it's the birth of the whole space age. This is it. We're going out there. Nobody can stop us. This is our place in the stars. Eh, that'll do. That'll do. Well, I'm almost afraid to turn on the radio then. If experience teaches me, I can go back and forth between two stations, one of which is aimed at the old folks, by which I mean the middle-aged types, and the other which is aimed square at the groinal area of the youth, eager to put their coins into the jukebox and scramble their brains with whatever drivel was being banged up by some Buddy Holly wannabes. All right, then. Let's gear ourselves up here. Prepare thyself. Let's see what the radio is giving us in 1957. That's not entirely fair. A little cruel there. That's a classic, after all. Flying Saucers Rock and Roll. Billy Lee Riley, I think, on the Sun label. But, I don't know. I love rockabilly as performed by some of its modern practitioners, Brian Setzer and American Treasure, for example. But the more I listen to it, the more I'm convinced there's about five guys who could handle it. There was Elvis. There was Jerry Lee Lewis. There was Carl Perkins. There was assorted Burnetts, I guess, who were kind of the... How many Burnett brothers? They're like the Baldwins of rockabilly back in the day. There are a few guys who could do it. They had the chops. They had the style. They had the backup guys, and they could swing. But a lot of it is... let's see what they follow this to. All the songs are about rocking. We're going to rock. Well, if we're going to rock, then I've got to ask the question, what are we doing right now? You know, the ultimate version of this would have been, you know, the rock and rock rock. We're going to rock tonight to the rock and rock rock. Hey, oh, guitar solo. Rock that E string. Buddy Holly died and those people were spared. You tell me there's a God! All right, let's see what's on the other channel. I presume it's the adult channel. And by that I mean adult in the old sense of the word, not the boobs a flapping, spotty writhing bottoms sense of the word that we currently employ today.
So I walk a little too fast.
Benzedrine, the dieter's friend.
And I drive a little too fast.
Benzedrine, the driver's friend.
And I'm reckless, it's true. But what else can you do at the end of a love affair?
Overcompensate,
so
maybe?
I talk a little too much.
Please, shut up.
And I laugh a little too much. And my voice is too loud when I'm out in a crowd, so that people are apt to stay.
Lady, you are screwed up.
Do they know? Do they care?
Nope.
That it's only that I'm lonely and low as can be.
I don't know. Go ask them.
And the smile on my face,
where else would it be?
Isn't really a smile at all.
What is it? A grimace? A leer? A moue? What? I mean, it's...
I smoke a little too much. And I joke a little too much.
There once was a man from Nantucket.
And the tunes I request are not always the best. But the ones where the trumpets blare. So I go at a maddening pace, and I pretend that it's taken his place.
A smile on your face.
But what else can you do at the end of a love affair?
I don't know, cut a bad record? Okay, well, it's over. No,
do they know, do they care that it's only that I'm lonely and low as can be? And the smile on my face isn't really a smile at all.
It's a frown turned upside down.
So I smoke a little too much.
That's not possible.
And I choke just a little too much.
Choke? Somebody Heimlich this lady.
And the tunes I request are not always the best, but the ones where the trumpets blare. So I go at a maddening pace, and I pretend that it's taken his place.
Smoking has taken his place.
But what else can you do at the end of a love affair?
I don't know, hang around a bar and ask for songs with lots of trumpets so all the men will say, "She's easy." Oh, man, this one's going to be like knocking over a wobbly 10-pin. Let me at her, boys! You know, I think that was Yvonne DiCarlo. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure that was Yvonne DiCarlo from The Munsters. She was actually a contralto of sorts and cut an album of standards. American standards, as they say, when referring to songs like that. And also porcelain bathroom fixtures. And if memory serves, and I don't know why it would... that album was orchestrated by Johnny Williams. The John Williams of music composition, you know, soundtracks, fame. It was 50 years ago. How old is John Williams? And still kicking it out. Unlike Mr. Carlo, who perished early in 2007. But that's 50 years in the future, isn't it? Well, that's the adult side of things, then. A little over-orchestrated, a little schmaltzy, a little... faux sophistication there, but it still has a, I don't know, certain panache to it, a little black cocktail dress, Edith Piaf-y kind of misery to it that, I don't know, doesn't wear as well as the rockabilly numbers we had before, but those were the two sides of the coin. Let's flip back to the youth channel. See what's going on in Teen World. Oh, I take everything back I said about the 50s. This is a great song.
Crazy little mama come knocking, brother, knocking at my front door, door, door. Crazy little mama come knocking, knocking at my front door. Crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before. I woke up this morning with a feeling of despair, looking for my baby and she wasn't there. Heard the one knocking, much to my surprise, there stood my baby looking in my eyes. Crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before. If you got a little mama and you wanna keep her neat, keep your little mama off my street. Same thing will happen like it did before. She come knock, knock, knocking at my door. Crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before. Crazy little mama come same thing will happen like it did before. She come knock, knock, knocking at my door. Crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before. Crazy little mama come knock, knock, knocking just like she did before.
Opening next Monday at the Paramount Theater, San Francisco. You'll see in person the greatest rock and roll stars of the day. Gloria Mann, Hank Ballard, and Shirley and Lee. The Robins and Laverne Baker. The Eldorados and the great Al Hibbler. I'll be emceeing three shows a day. For the first show, it's a matinee Monday, 2:30 at the Paramount Theater for 1 week. For the Jumpin' George Rock and Roll Jubilee, I'll see you there. You know, in teen jive talk, the phrase is come and go. I've been hearing cool or coolant for the past couple of years. It might catch on. Then there's groove it in the groove. Now I'm hearing super. I asked some kids over at McClymonds High School the meaning of super, superior, supreme, a guy who eats a lot of soup. They said, no, Jumpin', it's crazy, super. Well, whatever the case, here's one that's cool, crazy, in the groove, super, and sincerely yours by the Moonglows.
Certainly put a lot of effects on people's voices back then, didn't they? Well, let's tune the radio dial, see what else we can find in the adult channel.
This is Johnny Baker with Communism on the Spot. In the ancient world, the top authorities on myths were the Greeks. In our time, the communists have that distinction. One of the top myths they've been circulating is that the Communist Party is a workers' party. Some of its members no doubt answer that description, but these have always been sort of window dressing. Actually, the party is a political machine made up overwhelmingly of state officials, the military, and industrial leaders. The workers in the Soviet Union, like everyone else, take their orders from above, from the bosses of the Communist Party, which isn't a workers' party at all, but is a regimented bureaucracy whose members have only one interest, themselves.
That's one of the things I miss about the 50s. Commies. You knew where you stood with commies. And you knew where they were, too. They'd put them all in one big country with a border around it. You could find them.
There's a yellow rose in Texas that I am gonna see. Nobody else could miss her.
And of course there was that.
She cried so when I left her, it like to broke my heart. And if I ever find her, we never more apart.
That vogue for shouting choral music. You know what? I think I'm going to go back to the teen channel and see what innocent pleasures there are there. Because, you know, they're teens. What do they really have to be worried about?
Well, I was blown out of bed, hit in the head, saw three flashes of atomic red, spun around town, shot in the ground, swirling, swirling down faster than sound. It was a 50 mil a time. It was a 50 mil a ton. It was a 50 mil a ton hydrogen, like a radiant atomic bomb. Well, a rocket passed me, I climbed up a tree. Just then some got hold of me in the tree. He shot on off, stratosphere, 6,000 miles away from here. It was a 50 mil a ton.
Megaton.
It was a 50 mil a ton.
Megaton.
It was a 50 mil a ton hydrogen. Like the great atomic bomb.
So is he against the atomic bomb or in favor of the atomic bomb? It's kind of hard to tell. He's singing with the usual rockabilly mush mouth. Look at that. I feel the ground shake. It can't. We're not supposed to shift for another 5 minutes. It can't be that. Crap, that's the perimeter alert. But we don't have a perimeter. I'm here floating in the space-time continuum as far as I can tell. There's nothing outside. Unless. Well, I'm gonna go to the window and take a look. Last thing I need today. Krell-enabled monsters from the id. No trip to the 50s is complete without them, I guess. Yeah, well, that'll happen. You know how it goes. Your subconscious somehow taps into a vast, eternal, and infinite power source, and the next thing you know, that power source has permitted your id to attain corporeal, albeit in visible form, and come rampaging against you with destruction in mind. Damn, drat the luck. Well, I can see it here, frankly, now out the window, as it strains against the electromagnetic force field of the diner, which I didn't even know we had, but there it is, and it's a ghastly-looking thing. Well, ha-ha, I'm leaving. I don't have to worry about you. And again, I'm not supposed to jump for another 4 minutes. Gosh, it's awful strong. Okay, well, I can't just sit here and wait for this thing to kill me. I mean, I'm supposed to go back in time and save the diner. Unless I'm supposed to go back and die in 1957. Well, that doesn't make sense. How could I save anything then? No, this was not supposed to happen. I've got to think. Think. I know. Well, if that thing out there is a creature that was brought into being by the vast and infinite power supply around here somewhere, you'd think they'd have it marked, you know? Beware. Warning. Don't think id thoughts, but I have to come up with something myself. I have to come up with a sound that will destroy it. I have to think of the most horrible sound my soul can conjure to beat back this monster from the id. Think!
Oh!
worked. Shut this stuff off. I will get my brain to turn off the music that I created to defeat the monster from the ed. I'm very angry. I can't stand Walter Schumann and his do-do-da-da-do-da. Makes me so angry. It makes me mad. It makes me want to kill something. It makes me so furious. That's just great, man. That's just great. Use my fury to reignite the power of my id to defeat the song, but now it won, and it's breaking through the electromagnetic field. Wait a minute. I feel it. 33 minutes. We're coming up to the shift. Back to 1947 now. Hold on to the counter. Here we go. I'm in 1947, where there are no subconscious monsters from the id. Why? Because everyone had pretty much gotten it all out of their system in the previous few years. Well, obviously I was meant to be here then. We'll see what happens. Well, that's going to be it for now, folks. Thanks for dropping by. I'm James Lilacs. This has been The Diner for 1957. And we'll see you down the road.